This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with her boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Verse 76. One should follow a man of wisdom who criticizes one for one faults as one would follow a guide to some buried treasure. To one who follows such a wise man, it will be an advantage and not a disadvantage. The story of Theravada. While living at the Jetavana monastery, the Buddha spoke verse 76 of this book about Theravada, who was at one time a poor old Brahmin. Radha was a poor Brahmin who stayed in the monastery doing small services for the bhikkhus. For his services, he was given food and clothing and other things he needed, but was not encouraged to join the order. Although he had a strong desire to become a bhikkhu, one day early in the morning, when the Buddha looked over the world with his supernormal power, he saw the poor old Brahmin in his vision and knew that he was due for arahatship. So the Buddha went to the old man and learned from him that the bhikkhus of the monastery did not want him to join the order. The Buddha therefore called all the bhikkhus to him and asked them, "Is there any bhikkhu here who remembers any good action done to him by his old man?" To this question, the Venerable Sariputta replied, "Venerable Sir, I do remember a time when this old man offered me a spoonful of rice." "If that is so," the Buddha said, "shouldn't you help your benefactor get liberated from suffering?" Then the Venerable Sariputta agreed to make the old man a bhikkhu, and he was formally allowed to join the order. The Venerable Sariputta guided the old bhikkhu, and the old bhikkhu strictly followed his guidance. Within a few days, the old bhikkhu attained arahatship. When the Buddha next came to see the bhikkhu, they reported to him how strictly the old bhikkhu followed the guidance of the Venerable Sariputta. To them, the Buddha replied that a bhikkhu should be happy to follow guidance like Ratha and should not reason when criticized for any faults or failing. Then the Buddha spoke in verse as follows. Verse 76. "One should follow a man of wisdom who criticizes one for one's faults, as one would follow a guide to some buried treasure. To one who follows such a wise man, it will be an advantage and not a disadvantage."
Just before we start the meditation, I thought I would speak briefly on sense restraint. Just because I'm sure you're all seasoned meditators, or maybe some new faces. But what enlightenment in Buddhism is talking about our personal experience. So we have six senses in Buddhism, the sixth sense being the mind. And so, but in order to be able to meditate, you need to be virtuous as the foundation. So then that's the platform that the mind can then. So if you're really restless and haven't practiced a lot and don't have virtue, when you sit down to practice, you wonder why all of these thoughts and things come running at you. So it's more of a process of starting out with the virtue. So in Buddhism we have the five precepts for lay people, and more precepts if you want them. And then, but you have the six senses, so the eye, so you guard the eye from sights, guard the ear from sounds, guard the nose from smells, the tongue from taste, the body from touch, and the mind from thoughts. And the very simple thing is if you're meditating and then a thought comes up and you go, "Oh, it's just a thought," and put it to one side, or if a truck goes past, you know, it was just a sound. So it's usually these feelings that arise attached to one of the objects, we dislike it. And because we dislike it, then we react to it and we start thinking about it. So then we have another contact of dislike in the mind, and then dislike about the dislike, and then it's a kind of snowball. So what a being is enlightened when they no longer have proliferation of the six senses. So when the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind are guarded, that's like the external is like Mara's attack. So all of these things, the Buddha likened it to, if you got a big boulder and you threw it in a mound of mud, that's what our senses are like if they were unguarded. Mud just flies everywhere, the boulder goes into the mud. But with the senses guarded, Buddha said it was like if you got a ball of string and you threw it at an oak door and it would just bounce off. Like you would notice it, but the effect is far less than the boulder going into the mud. So that is like the mind of an arahant. It's not that they're completely free from suffering, because there's still the contact, which is agitation, but they no longer proliferate about it in their mind. So when we're meditating, we're kind of strengthening our mind so that it's more resilient and it doesn't react to sense contact. So that's my introduction to sense restraint. So if you ever find yourself meditating and it's not working, just ask yourself, are my senses guarded? And you'll find that they're not. So you can just say thinking, or pain. It's just keep it as that contact. So I'll do a guided for the first 15 minutes, and then we'll have 15 minutes of ready to start. So start by relaxing the body. You can massage your shoulders if you've got a bit of an ache like me. Just get in a comfortable position. And if the body needs to move during the meditation, that's fine. Just do so gently and quietly and try not to disturb the mind. And so I like to start in an upright position, or as upright as your body allows. And then as the meditation progresses, just kind of let the body do what it likes. So upright position, shoulders relaxed, head balanced. And start by checking that you're in a good posture. And then bring the attention to the toes. Just relax the toes, draining all tension out into the earth. Till the toes start to feel tingly and relaxed. Relax the feet. All tension in the feet, draining out into the earth. The feet begin to feel light and tingly. Relax the ankles. All tension draining out. Tingly and relaxed. Relax the lower legs from down upwards. Inside the lower legs, outside the lower legs. And the lower legs begin to feel tingly and relaxed. Fading away. Starting to vanish. Relax the knees inside and out. Lots of problems in the knees, because we don't give attention to them. But just bring your attention into the knees. Relax all tension away, draining out into the earth. Relax the thighs from down upwards. Massive muscles, connective tissue, the bones, everything in the thighs. The body starts to settle down. The thighs begin to become tingly and relaxed. All tension flowing out into the earth. So thighs begin to vanish. Relax the hips, right up to the waist. Everything in this area, tingly and relaxed. All tension draining out. It's the waist. Lower areas begin to vanish. Become aware of the belly inside and out, just as it moves with the breath. Just bringing awareness to the belly. Relax the belly and the lower back and the sides. All the organs and everything in this region. Just getting to know the body as it becomes more and more relaxed, settling down, fading away, comfortable and at ease. Relax the diaphragm, the solar plexus, and the middle back. From down upwards, all tension fading away, coming tingly and light. Relax the chest and heart. Smile into the heart. The heart pumps the blood all around the body. The little smiles being sent all around the body. Relax the chest, the heart, and then the upper back. It starts to feel tingly and at ease. And just become aware of the lungs as they fill up and empty. Just aware of the breath coming in and going out of the lungs. Relax the chest, the heart, the lungs, and the upper back. All tension fading away, draining out into the earth. Relax the shoulders, the front of the shoulders, the back of the shoulders, the top of the shoulders, even the armpits. It's completely at ease, welcoming whatever is here, becoming friends with it. As the shoulders become deeper and deeper relaxed, like soft clouds, tingly and at ease. Actually start to feel the tingly sensation spreading through the shoulders. Usually shoulders hold much tension. Now is the time to let go of all tension, may even feel the shoulders droop a little. As the shoulders begin to fade away, start to vanish, tingling at ease. Relax the upper arms, from the shoulders down towards the elbows, everything in the upper arm, draining the tension out, tingling at ease. Relax the elbows, all tension draining away, like soft clouds. At ease. Relax the lower arms and the elbows down towards the wrist. The muscles, bones, everything in the lower arms. So they begin to fade away. Relax the wrists deeply. They begin to tingle and fade away. Relax the hands, the lines on the hands and the fingertips. the hands begin to tingle with the tingle of relaxation. As we're bringing our attention to them, they settle and become deeper and deeper relaxed, and begin to fade away and vanish. Relax the neck and throat. Just aware of the breath passing through the neck and throat. Just for a moment. Relax all the muscles of the neck. All tension in the neck and throat begin to fade away and vanish. The neck and throat are tingling at ease. Relax the chin deeply. This tingly starts to spread through the chin. And the tingly sensation through the jaw. And just see relaxation spreading bit by bit. From the jaw up into the cheeks and the cheekbones. Through to the nose. The bags under the eyes, relaxing deeper and deeper. And the temples, all tension in the temples fading away. This tingly sensation spreading through the temples. Relax the eyelids, going deeper and deeper relaxed. And just sense this small smile at the corners of the eyes. A gentle smile. Relax the eyes themselves and the muscles connecting the eyes. So much tension is held in the eyes. Now's an opportunity to relax them completely. Relax the eyebrows and the lines from the forehead as they begin to vanish. Relax the scalp and the ears. The senses are guarded. Body is relaxed. It's like the borders of the body begin to expand into the vastness. Now we just ask the body to take care of itself, welcoming anything that arises, and turning attention to the mind. Put down the past. The past is gone, it's not coming back. Whatever we've learned from the past, or whatever we might think about it, we just put it down. Now is the time to meditate. Likewise with the future and imagination, we just put these down. We could think a million thoughts in the future, there'd still be something else. So we put down the future. And even the present, we put the present down as well. So we can choose the focus for our mind. And just become aware of the breath. The breath comes into the body and goes out of the body quite naturally. Some people are aware of it at the nose, some people the lips, some people just sense the feeling of the breath without any location. So just become aware of the breath, become friends with it. What is its temperature? What is its texture? Comes in and goes out. Sometimes it's useful to have a mantra for the breath. So I like one which is breathing in the light of the Buddha. Just visualize light coming in. And breathe out, let go. Let go of all tension and difficulties. Letting go into the radiance, the simplicity of this moment. Breathe in the light of the Buddha, the radiance of consciousness. Breathe out, let go. Letting go of any disturbances or sense contact. Breathe in the light of the Buddha. Breathe out, let go. Like a river flowing on. The light of the Buddha is like virtue and goodness. You breathe in, filling up with that light. And when you breathe out, let go of everything, labels, recognition, comparing, thinking. Let it all go. Breathe in the light of the Buddha. Breathe out, let go. Just accepting whatever arises as a friend. Getting to know the breath. Breathing in that radiance and goodness. Breathing out, joyfully letting go. Slight smile at the eyes and in the heart. Breathing in the light of the Buddha. Breathe out, let go. Purifying and letting go. Breathing in, light of the Buddha. Sense of radiance. Breathing out, joyfully letting go. relaxing deeper and deeper into the breath. Welcoming and allowing. In the line of the Buddha, breathe out the O. What's the texture of the breath? What's its temperature? Breathe in the line of the breath. Breathe out the breath. Oh. Breathe in the light, breathe out the cold. radiance and peace. Breathe in the light of the Buddha. Breathe out, let go. Allowing, welcoming, and letting go. Breathe in the light of the Buddha. Breathe out, let go. Breathe in the light of the Buddha. Breathe out, let go. sense of radiance and goodness, freedom and letting go. Just become aware of how you feel right now, having come here tonight, your senses guided. How did you find the meditation? Just honestly ask yourself how you feel from now, from before when we started. Are you more peaceful? Are you more relaxed? And just have a sense of gratitude to ourselves for the willingness to practice, to do what is difficult, and thankfulness to one another coming here tonight for that Kalyana Mitta, spiritual friendship. And just share benevolence with all beings everywhere and with ourselves. And when you're ready, you may open your eyes. I like that meditation because I'm quite a visual person. So I see the light of the Buddha is just like our own virtue and goodness. So just breathing in. The Buddha once said that consciousness is radiant, and on the path to enlightenment is the second last stage, is where you finally give up your attachment to consciousness. So, because even believing in consciousness, holding on to that, then it would be a cause for being reborn into formless realms, which last for a very long time. But just that thought of virtue, that's why we think of it white when we think of virtue, is because it's something that's very pure. So I think making that image in the mind of breathing in the light of the Buddha, you kind of this idea of breathing in goodness. So anyway, works for me. We all find our own tools. So we're talking tonight a little bit. It's a really interesting sutta actually, because here was this man who, there's different reasons to ordain, and in some of the reasons are looked down upon. But you can imagine if you don't have much food or you don't have much money, then ordaining as a monk looks like, or a nun looks like, a pretty good thing to do, because you're going to get fed, you're going to have a place to live. So you can imagine this man in this story, he was pretty rough, you know. He didn't have, even though he was born in a Brahmin family, not anybody wanted much to do with him. But who was it? Was it Moggallana or Sariputta? Sariputta. So this is something about mindfulness in there, that when we do our actions, when we do something, a part of the Buddha's teaching is to reflect on that at a later time. So when we've had our day, sometimes you can sit down and go, oh, what did I do earlier today? Was it wholesome or was it unwholesome? And you kind of track through your actions and you look at them and to try and learn from them. And you can see that an arahant like Sariputta in this story, he even remembers that the story behind this was meant to be that the food that Sariputta actually gave him, this is what I remember reading somewhere anyway, when he gave him a spoon of rice, it was food that the monks had already given him. So it wasn't even his food to begin with, he was given it, but he was so poor. But the fact that he gave that one spoon of food, and Sariputta even remembers a single spoon of rice given to him. So it's pretty amazing mindfulness, you know. So I think. When we come into Buddhism, it's like generosity and thankfulness, the two things that are really rare in the world. And I mean, just look, we kind of have the heritage of the Buddha wearing these robes, so we come into the robes and we're expected to practice and in turn share with the lay people. And if you have a teacher like Sariputta, sure, you can become enlightened very fast. But in this day and age, I think it's a time where the body is a big thing. Everybody looks at the body, you know, wanting this kind of image of being fit and healthy. But the people that actually want to take care of the heart are much fewer, you know. Mm-hmm. And so coming to groups like this, developing generosity, particularly in the West, there's a real kind of wall against wanting to be generous. You know, it's our hard-earned money, it's our stuff, and we don't want to give it away. But the Buddha says, no, that's not the right attitude. It's actually willingly give out of the heart and give freely of your own. That's of the highest benefit. And that's why practicing as monks and nuns, arahatship is open to it. Because you have to see, on one side you have theft and stealing, and on the other side you have generosity and giving. And so by us being monks and nuns, there's an opportunity for people to give. And if they don't give, then we die or disrobe. So it's like there's a reason why there is ordination. And that reason is to, and it's kind of like an exponential thing. So somebody who, I don't know if you know about the paths of enlightenment, do you know much about that?
Not yet.
Okay. So there's four paths. So the first path is called stream enterer. So one who's beginning practice, I presume we have a few Buddhists here. The first path is stream enterer. So somebody who enters the stream of Dharma, then it's like goes away from the worldly stream. So the worldly stream leads out into sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, and thoughts, where the stream of the Dharma leads inwards. So it goes away from those things and it slowly brings the mind away from those sense things. And one who enters the stream of Dharma, it's like you don't have to have lots of book knowledge and all these other things. It's just somebody who's practiced and had in their heart that aspiration to realize the teachings of a Buddha, and eventually they enter the stream of the Dharma. And one of the similes is like, if you look down a well and see the water, you've seen the water, so you've seen enlightenment, so you're sure to get there. But just because you haven't yet gone down the well and drunk the water doesn't mean that you still know it's water, because you can see it with your eyes. And that's like stream entry, somebody who's seen the truth clearly, they've seen into cause and effect. So they know that if they continue in ignorance, that's going to lead to suffering. But if they continue in wisdom, then that's going to lead to the end of suffering. So it's like uprooting slowly those causes for ignorance. Then one moves in the direction of stream enterer. And then so the stream enterer. And then there's once returner. A once returner is a being that they're reborn once into a heavenly realm, and then once again they come back to earth to finish the job. And then a non-returner, which is the next one, they're just reborn into the formless realms, and then they realize extinguishment or nirvana from there. And then the last one is arahat. And the myth goes that if you become an arahat as a layperson, you have to ordain within 7 days, otherwise you die. So
that's a bit tough.
Because this comes back to the generosity of giving, because there's no way a being could be so pure that they could have anything to do with money or worldly things. So they would have to turn away from those things to be a benefit to other beings.
Yeah.
So, and but yeah, I mean, thankfulness as well, learning to have a grateful heart, you know, in the small things with our loved ones and our friends. When we get something, do we just say the words, or do we actually mean it in our heart? You know, is it, we get so used to, oh yeah, we've got a Christmas card from so-and-so, and we've got it for the last 20 years. And do we look at that card and actually have thankfulness and gratefulness in our hearts, or do we just kind of glaze over it, you know, glaze the eyes?
So I don't look at windsuit.
So, and that's why I love in Buddhism as well, that the respect for the elderly in our community, for those and our leaders, and obviously the more virtuous they are, the more we kind of want to help them, but also just because people are our parents and are our leaders, to see those are very difficult roles. I don't know how many of you have been parents here, but I'm sure that the suffering of bringing up children is a is a lot of suffering, a lot of attachment. So there's one simile where the Buddha said, even if you were to carry your parents around on your shoulders for the rest of your life, still you wouldn't repay your debt to them. But if you show them the way of Dhamma, so just teach through your own experience, and that led them to the Dhamma, then that would also be repaying the debt. So it's like the cause and effect.
Hang on. So yep. It's my kids that should be teaching me about this?
Well, anybody, but that's one of the
things about the Dhamma.
Yeah, so just by sharing the Dhamma, it's not like evangelical, we go around and go, yeah, here, like my father is Christian and my brother's a Christian missionary, I'm not going to go to them and say, look, I've got it right, you guys have got it wrong. But just by living through an example, and then if the interest is ever there, and I think that there's different types of Dhamma as well. There's the Dhamma, when the Buddha came across somebody, he would only ever teach to them to their level of understanding. So there's in a sense, there's a worldly Dhamma, which is still good, and then but then there's the teachings of a Buddha which are just solely to do with enlightenment, and that's kind of like the higher Dhamma. So if the Buddha came across a king who likely wasn't going to become a Buddhist, he could still teach them the Dhamma, but to the level of their understanding, to teach them about virtue, teach them about looking after their parents, teach them about not having violence in their kingdoms, and all of these positive points of Dhamma that will lead them to a good rebirth, but they may not lead them to the end of suffering, but it's still good Dhamma, you know? So it's learning to gauge, not to teach out of wanting everybody to believe what you believe, but teaching to people out of a genuine respect for where they're at. But I really like in this story that somebody who, the only thing that he did was give one spoon of rice, and that was enough for him to be taken on by Sariputta, like the foremost, the Buddha's disciples. So there's one spoon of rice. Seems so small, but it's meant to be that if you give to a stream winner, then that's like 1,000 times of giving to a non-stream winner. And if you give to somebody who's on the next level, so it's like that. So somebody who gives just a spoon of rice to an arahat, then that's worth an extraordinary amount of good karma. So, but the way that the Buddha kind of taught us is to have an even mind. So even if you come across some scallywag monks or people of different traditions, you still give to them out of a good heart, because they're trying to do right, and you never know what they're going to be like in the future. So that's that kind of giving from the heart. You know, you might not give them money or something, but you can certainly give them a bit of food. And I think in this world, that stems into doing volunteer work and finding the elderly people on your street who don't really have anybody, and just little acts of kindness and good. So, any questions this evening? Yes.
Yeah, well, I don't really understand verse 76. One should follow a man of wisdom who criticizes one for one's faults. We're not supposed to criticize people, are we?
Well, it depends on where you're coming from. So in Buddhism, the Buddha had the four Brahmaviharas.
Yeah.
So they're the sublime states, and the Buddha is meant to only ever dwell in these four states. So benevolence, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. But this is surrounding the end of suffering. So if monk over here is taking money or whatever, I could be angry at them and tell them something, and that would be wrong. But if out of my goodness of my heart, I saw they were doing something that was wrong, and I said, look, friend, what you're doing isn't leading you to good results in the future.
Yeah.
So it's kind of chastising them, but not because I want to be angry at them, because I want them to make the most of being in the road. So then you're coming from a good place in your heart. You're not trying to put them down. You just want the best for them. And the Buddha likened it to, like, if you're saying a lot of you were parents. Now, what would you do if one of your kids swallowed a bone and it was stuck in their throat? You would hang them upside down and do what you can to get the bone out, even if you drew blood, you know, because you know that will save their life. And that's kind of the Buddha simile. Sometimes you do have to hurt a little bit, but you're not doing it out of ill will.
Yeah.
You're doing it out of, well, this is going to save your life.
Okay.
So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Any questions, Lorenz?
Yes. No, I was just thinking when we were working on that Dhammapada story, the word, the English word, was stronger in the particular translation we were working with. It was rebuke. And we got into a discussion of the difference between blame and criticizing,
yeah,
which is pretty much parallel to what you just said. You don't, a strict teacher like Sariputta was able to be helpfully critical as opposed to putting the old Brahmin down. So there's that distinction, just pretty much what you said there, and we were wrestling with that as we dealt with the English. The word rebuke seemed to be easier to misunderstand than criticize, but...
Yeah. I think it, because, yeah, there's one simile I like, and so a lot of this could come from the inside. And so on your own practice, it's like, if you imagine there's two tightrope walkers on a tightrope. Now, one says to the others, I'll look after you and you look after me. And then the other one says, no, friend, you look after yourself and I look after myself. Because if everybody's ever tried to walk on a tightrope, you're doing all you can to stay on that rope. So if you're trying to save somebody else, you're never going to get across the road. And so that's very much like in Buddhism, like the teachings that we give is so people can walk across that rope on their own. And we can't be concerned with other people when we're on that rope. You know, we have to, our lives on the line. And, yeah. Sorry.
I think it's so easy to become for all these stories, you know.
Probably accumulated.
You know, that sort of stuff.
I think
lots of shortcuts.
Well,
what happens to us normal people?
Well, actually, the simile for, because we're still being born in a time where an arahat, where the Buddha's teaching is alive, and the Buddha said, so long as samsara, and samsara is the round of rebirth, because the Buddha went back 92 aeons, so maybe 92 universes ago, and then he saw that further back he went, there was no beginning to things. He couldn't find a beginning. It was just universe after universe, life after life. And then, and the Buddha similarly said that, now, he said a yoke, it's not a very well used word, but you know what a yoke is. Like, let's just say a tire, a car tire floating in the ocean, the tube of a tire, the tube of a car tire floating in the ocean, and the whole earth is covered with water, and there's a blind turtle, and once every 100 years, that blind turtle puts its head up to the surface of the water. Now, what's the likelihood of it putting its head into that? There's a blind turtle putting its head into that yoke.
Yeah.
Now, it's not very much. And the Buddha said, so too, so long is samsara, and so rare is the chance to be reborn in a time where you hear the Dharma and be reborn as a human being. So we're in that group. And we're the blind turtle that's put their head in the yoke.
There's another question.
Yes.
They say a human realm is the best, one of the best realms, or the best realm to be born into.
Yes.
Because you can sort of, you know, work to enlightenment that way. But, you know, you also mentioned some of the other realms. If you go to one of the higher realms, you can become enlightened from there as well.
It's much harder though, because if you're reborn in a heavenly realm, you're basically feeding off joy and happiness, so your whole existence is just really, really great. You don't have the suffering, you don't have birth, you don't have old age, you don't have sickness, you're spontaneously born, and you just kind of feed off your goodness. So when you get there, you may have really good intentions of practicing the Dharma, but you may just get carried away in the joys of being in a heavenly realm. Because as a human, we're faced with suffering.
They're the
formless realms. So.
Oh, formless realms.
So even in this universe, say the highest realm in this universe is meant to be the Brahma realm. So in Christianity, in other religions anyway, you have like a creator God. So in Buddhism, that being still exists, but they're not so much a creator God, they're just the being that's in that position, and they are subject to rebirth at the end of a universe. Yeah. But above that realm is then what's known as the formless realm. Mm-hmm. So we have five aggregates: form, feeling, perception, volition, consciousness. But in those realms, you only have feeling, perception, volition, and consciousness. So there's no form at all. So there's no imagination, no dreaming, no bodies like we think of it. They're a completely different being. And they're so pure that they just kind of feed off radiance and feed off goodness and stuff. They're just... So you can still be reborn into those realms without being an anagami or a which is what meant to have happened to the two Buddha's previous teachers. When he became enlightened, he went to teach his teachers. So before he became enlightened, he had some spiritual teachers, but they both died, and so they were both born into the formless realms. So they missed out, because in those realms you can't hear the Dhamma, because you have no body, no way of communicating.
So no way to earn credit.
Sorry?
No way to earn karma and credits.
Yeah. So anyway,
we better find Nirvana here.
Well, it's a good opportunity to practice. Just aim for stream entry.
Yeah.
And then if you become a stream entry, you have a maximum of seven lives left. But, thank you for all your time this evening. Just remember generosity and thankfulness.
Yes.
Okay.
Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides prepare virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world. May the highest gods be your forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death. May those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize the Nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and surpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my venerable Lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all always. May darkness and disillusion be dispelled.
Bhavatu sabba mangalam. Arahantu sabba devata. Sabba buddha nupavena sada soti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam. Arahantu sabba devata. Sabba dhamma nupavena sada soti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam. Rakantu sabba devata. Sabba sangha nupavena sada soti bhavantu te.